Thank you for listening to another episode of Remake Rewind, the podcast where you decide if remakes or reboots should have happened. I'm Mike, as always. With me, I've got my buddy Alex. How you doing, man?
I'm great after hearing that intro. Holy shit, buddy.
Ooh, God, it sounds like I've done it before.
You haven't done it like that?
No, it's a little different.
Yeah, you've been working on different. It, huh?
Yeah, you know, instead of introducing us, you know, and then saying it, I just like, you know, I'm going to say the whole thing, and then I'll introduce us.
Sometimes your explanation of what the podcast does goes on longer, though. This was concise. I like it.
Yeah, sometimes I, you know, I'll go in and hey, we don't talk about which one's better.
No, this was the one. You know what? Today's it.
You just, you know, listen. All right,
listen,
listeners, listen.
Listen. Do what you're doing.
this one's gonna be an interesting one. This is gonna be, I think, a little difficult to talk about. Not necessarily the subject matter, although the subject matter will come into play. But we are covering another parody, essentially a spoof movie, and spoof movies are always kind of hard to talk about because there's a joke every 15 seconds, and then, you know, we're not just going to butcher people's jokes by saying them.
And they're all references.
So it'll be interesting, but we are actually going to be talking about Blazing Saddles, and believe it or not, Paws of Fury, The Legend of Hank is actually a remake of Blazing Saddles, but animated and kid-friendly. Interesting.
Yeah.
So,
I'm stoked.
Obviously, I know prior to recording this, you didn't see Paws of Fury because it just came out, you know, 4 days ago. but Blazing Saddles, I assume you've seen before.
Yeah, that was a staple in my house growing up. I've seen it many, many times, maybe 100 times, maybe 500 times.
This is actually only the second time I've watched it. So, I watched it once growing up, you know, with my dad. You know, he liked it. He was a big Mel Brooks fan. But this one wasn't one that was on TV all the time, like Spaceballs was. And we love Spaceballs. Like Spaceballs is, I actually love that movie. I watched that one all the time. I own that one. And that was one that my mom even liked. My mom hated Blazing Saddles. And believe it or not, Katrina hates Blazing Saddles as well.
Oh, man.
So it's just not one that's been on a loop for me.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice to go back. I don't think I've seen this movie probably 15, 20 years.
Wow.
So
that's cool.
God, I hate being old enough where I could have gone back that long without seeing something.
Yeah, tell me about it. I think I've seen it, if not within the last year, within the last 2 years for sure. Like, it's pretty regular.
You've definitely mentioned it in a What Have You Been Up To, Bud, before.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Nice revisit for you and a very long overdue revisit for me.
Yeah.
Do you want to summarize this one or do you want me to summarize it?
I'll summarize Blazing Saddles.
All right, summarize it, bud.
Blazing Saddles is about a black sheriff in the Wild West who is what's the word I'm looking for, sent to be the sheriff of an obviously all white town by the state procurer with ulterior motives. He wants to have the town kill the sheriff, and he wants to run the railroad through the town. But the sheriff is too clever for him and gets the formerly racist or prejudiced people of the town on his side. And they manage to outsmart the state procurer.
The attorney general.
It's the attorney general. His sign says state procurer, which I think is funny.
Yeah, I mean,
because he literally pimps out Lily von Stupp.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And the whole thing ends with a brawl in a cafeteria in Burbank.
Yeah, definitely breaks the fourth wall, literally. And then goes crazy. What's
really
funny
about that?
This movie
might break the fifth wall.
Yeah, it might just about. But it's so great seeing these movies now that I've been in Los Angeles for like 6.5, almost 7 years. And seeing that, obviously, you know, this movie is 50 years old, close to. Because this was in the, what year was this? This is in the 70s, right? Like 70.
We're in 2022.
Yeah, no, what year is the movie made?
Oh, yeah, that's right. 74 or 6, I forget.
Yeah, so we're running up on 50 years that this movie, but you know, they come out of the Warner Brothers lot, and I don't live too far from the Warner Brothers lot. Like, I drive by it, not daily, but multiple times a week, and seeing it and how it changed, it was really interesting. Like, I know exactly where that is, and I know exactly what entrance they came out of.
I went to see a movie at the Warner Brothers theater, like the lot theater.
I saw Dune there.
Oh, that's awesome. Why did you see Dune there?
Earlier this year, in January.
Why?
Oh, Katrina is, you know, on like the nominating committee and stuff for SAG. So we got to go to like special screenings. So I got to go to a screening where Denis was there.
That's
awesome. Then we got to go on a special tour of like, they had a little museum set up with like all the props and costumes.
Fuck.
And I got to see all that stuff too.
I saw a movie that I can't disclose recently because it's not out yet. Yeah, it was cool. I'll tell you about it off air. No, I mean, I won't. Yeah, I won't tell anybody.
I'll cut that.
But we got to walk through the, through the sound stage and stuff, through the sound stages, the whole back lot, and the little road that they run out of onto Olive Street is like exactly the street that we walked down. So I was watching, I was like, oh, I was literally just there 2 months ago.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's rad. It's kind of nice being in Los Angeles. Sometimes it breaks movies though, like when I TV shows, like when I watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. There's you know, they walk around the Fox Hills Mall, and like when they go to court, it's actually just the City Hall in Culver City and whatnot. So it's like I know it breaks it, but it is kind of fun to be like a little behind the curtain and see that kind of stuff. But let's get into the movie. As somebody who hasn't seen it in like 20 years, there's definitely a little bit of a "ooh, you couldn't do that today" kind of mentality. But I do want to say that while they use a lot of slurs in this movie that I'm not going to repeat, when you think about the subject matter and it's a period piece, it makes sense. And also, this is a very, it's an anti-racist film. So you need to have a little extreme examples of racism, especially in a spoof parody satire film. So I'm, you know, maybe this could be made today. And I mean, it just was obviously for kids, but like, could you think an adult version of this movie could be made anywhere near what this was?
Yeah. I mean, I think it would not be, well, I don't want to say tentpole because they, who's Warner Brothers? This was not meant to be the tentpole of their summer. It just barely came, you know, got to wide release, and it ended up being a hit. But I feel like if it was remade today, it would end up being by like A24, Annapurna or something. It'd be some like...
And it would go straight to streaming.
Yeah, after the pandemic, yeah, probably. But yeah, probably not get made. I don't think that there's... I don't know how many people are capable of making something like this today.
No. I mean, outside of the Wayans brothers, which even their stuff, the quality has been... after Scary Movie and Scary Movie 2, which I know they kind of went away, but there really hasn't been anything like this in Scary Movie.
I kind of also feel like satire nowadays is more tinged with like dark dramatic stuff or like absurdity or like... moments of violence. Not that this isn't absurd, but like it's dark, you know. It's almost I feel like this would end up being remade as like almost more of a horror or something.
Like Jordan Peele could do a version of this.
Exactly.
I think the closest to this, and you know, obviously it doesn't have the fourth wall breaks and like the buffoonery and like just stuff that physically could not happen, but probably the closest to the absurdity and satire would probably be Don't Look Up.
Yeah,
recently,
but I don't think you get away with the racial stuff doing slapstick.
No, it's hard. Like you could, it's interesting though. Like, and I don't want to, you know, obviously we're two cis white males in America coming from a place of privilege. It's weird that, you know, you can have Tarantino and you and other white writers write a Western or a period piece and you can totally drop an N-bomb. Not saying that it's okay, but that's it's still acceptable in a period piece for it to happen. And, you know, you do get a visceral reaction from the crowd, but it is interesting that you couldn't get away with doing that in a comedy anymore. And I'm not saying that you should be able to. I'm just saying it is interesting that comedy can't do it, but you can in drama.
I think it's too adjacent to laughs for people.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think people get uncomfortable laughing in the same breath. The most recent thing that I can think of with like a predominantly white cast is Be Cool with John Travolta. There's probably been examples since then, but that one leaps to mind immediately as a recent thing. And, you know, the big N-bomb in that movie starts off, like kicks off this whole speech from Cedric the Entertainer, and then he shoots a guy in the head. So again, it's like, it's directly adjacent to violence.
Yeah, absolutely. It always either ends in violence or somebody getting their comeuppance.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's interesting. God, these movies are always tough to talk about because when you go and do your highlights, you want to talk about the jokes, and you know we'll never deliver a joke as well as any of the people in this movie. Like, we're never going to deliver a joke as well as Mel Brooks or Gene Wilder.
Yeah, I'm like, also I'm not going to be recorded repeating most of these jokes.
No, but you know, some of the things that I thought was really funny, and you know, not everything that they did was like overtly like I'm going to throw a racial slur around, but like towards the beginning, you know, they're working on the railroad and you've got these white guys who are like keeping the black guys working, and they're like, sing a song. They're expecting to sing, you know, the old spirituals. And then they start singing like crooner style songs, like a Sinatra style song, which I thought was hilarious. And they're like, no, sing like, you know, Sweet Low, Sweet Chariot. And they're like, nope, never heard that one. So the white guys start singing it. And, and they're like, nope, you don't know. I don't know that one. And like, I don't remember what this one's called, but it's like,
the Camp Town Lady.
Doo-dah. Yeah, and everything. It's like, sing that one. They're like, nope, we don't know it. And the white guys are singing. And then the white boss shows up. And he's like, what are you guys doing? So, like,
what in the wide world of sports is going on here? Yeah. Sorry, I'm not going to quote. I know every single line of this movie. It's hard not to.
But I thought that was actually really funny. And it's like, you know, it's still, you know, dicey today. But like, I thought that was actually, you know, kind of subverting expectations for me.
That's why it's so hard to like talk about this movie to a, you know, potential audience that hasn't seen it, or to like show somebody YouTube clips or something. Like, I don't think that unless you're watching the movie, any of the deliberate anachronisms really come across. Like,
right.
Everything in this movie is very purposeful. As I was doing a little bit of research on this stuff today, I realized that there's like explanations for some of these jokes that I wouldn't have realized before reading it. So like, this is hard to talk about without just saying it. One of the things that I think really wouldn't fly today is Mel Brooks in Red Face.
Oh, that's right.
He's one of the Native American chiefs. And, you know, the joke is sort of that he's an Indian or Sioux chief that speaks Yiddish because it's Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
And I was reading this person's, you know, take on it, their little analysis of it. And they are claiming that Mel Brooks is making a connection between I want to make sure I get the wording right here. They're claiming that Mel Brooks is calling out Hollywood for the behavior of putting Jewish people in red face, which is a thing that was happening in the Westerns at this time.
Interesting.
And he was trying to turn that on his head by being in red face, but speaking Jewish. So sort of calling that thing out. It's like, that's actually kind of interesting. He's making a point. I'm not saying it's okay. You know, I'm not necessarily condoning it.
But it might make sense at that.
But there's more thought going into it than just Mel Brooks saying, "Oh, it'd be funny if I was a Jew or if I was a Native American."
Yeah, and for us, you know, this only being my second, maybe third time seeing it, you know, it's very possible as a kid I saw it more than once. But the time that I remember seeing it, I was between 10 and 13 years old. You know, looking at it from, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s to 2022, that's an easy thing to miss and not connect. But in, you know, 76, you know, you still had all the spaghetti Western movies being made, and they were still like the biggest blockbusters with, you know, why am I blanking on his name? Dirty Harry actor, Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
You know, those movies were still very big. So it might have been something that, you know, your average film critic, and if podcasts existed back in 1976, that people like you and me would have picked up on back then. But that's not going to be something that picks up. So that's actually like really interesting to think about.
Yeah. And like Iron Eyes Cody is the crying Indian actor, the Don't Litter in America campaign. And it's not Native American, he's an Italian. I'd have to check the year that came out, but I think that's sort of what Mel Brooks is referencing there. And when you look at the context of it, you know, changes the conversation for me a little bit.
No, absolutely. And you know, to an extent, especially with comedy and satire, you do have to think about the time that it was made, because, you know, certain things that are satire today, in 50 years from now, it might not make sense, because you have to be in the here and the now to recognize the political issues that exist at this time, unless you're a film historian, then you've got that context. So I think that's fair to point out. How good is Gene Wilder in this, though? I mean, obviously it goes without saying he's a genius.
Yeah, he's fantastic in this.
I laughed so hard, and it's not even that great of a joke, but when we first meet him, Jim, the Waco kid, he, you know, he's talking about how he used to be the fastest gun in the West and, you know, all that. And he's like, look at my hand. And Bart was like, steady as a rock, like super impressed. He goes, yeah, but I shoot with this hand. It's just like flopping like crazy. And then like, he ends up being really good. Like, he does this little thing that I thought was really cool. He's like, When I say go, there's like a chessboard in front of me. He's like, try to grab the king. Get your hands on, you know, 4 inches on either side. And when I say go, try to grab it. And then like he goes, go. And then you just see, you know, Bart clap his hands and he's like, ha, I got it. And then he looks and it's a completely different piece. It's not the king. And it's just like, it's absurd. Nobody could move that fast. And then like he does it throughout the rest of the movie and he's supposed to not be as good as he used to be, but he's like unstoppable at every point in this movie.
Cleavon Little does some good sleight of hand in that shot too. Like you don't notice it the first couple times you watch it, I think. But if you're really looking at it, you can see him clap his hands and then draw his hands back and drop the piece into his lap and then open it up and there's nothing there.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's great. Just trying to go through.
I did both of these movies without notes, by the way. Like Blazing Saddles, I can just talk about off the cuff. Yeah, and totally. Legend of Hank, I saw in the theater, so I didn't take notes.
Yeah, that's fair. I was able to take notes because I was in a theater that had like walls between each row.
Nice.
And then I got a special mode on my phone where for like it inverts the colors and then it dims it so you can't actually see. It's amazing. Like you can't see it more than like 2 feet away from you. And I was the only one in my row.
That's great.
And I was in the very back. So I was able to. I you know, it was fine. But
good theater,
Yeah, I don't do that if there is anybody who could even remotely see it.
Don't worry. Nobody's taking away your film guy credit.
Yeah. One of the, you know, just to go through it really quick, like the true plot of this, the whole thing is the attorney general, like you said, wants to go through and he owns the railroad and they go through and there's quicksand. So they have to now divert the railroad through the town.
I thought quicksand was going to be a much bigger deal when I got older. It's fine.
Okay, John Mulaney.
Fuck, man.
Stealing John Mulaney's jokes.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't cheat on anybody, though.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, he definitely did. There's the math on that does not add up.
Anyway.
Yeah, anyway. But then, you know, so he, the town goes to Mel Brooks, who also plays the governor. And it's like, I need to. Oh, no, he was the attorney general. I got it backward. He was the
attorney
general. No, he's the
governor. It's because it says gov on the back of his.
Oh, that's right. He was governor. Okay. I'm an idiot. Don't doubt yourself, Mike. Yeah. Just say what you're going to say and stick with it with absolute conviction.
Believe in yourself.
That's what I need to do. So they go to him, say, hey, we need a new sheriff. The attorney general guy, obviously, he doesn't want a real sheriff there. So his whole idea is we'll put a black man in there. I'm going to spin it and let Mel Brooks look good because, hey, if you appoint a black man as a sheriff, you're going to be really progressive. You might be president one day. You're going to be the first person to do it. So you'll be in the history books. And, you know, there is something you said. That is something, unfortunately, to this day, we're still getting. You know, like we have our newest Supreme Court justice. She's the first black woman in the Supreme Court. And so we still, to this day, 50 years after this movie came out, we're still putting people of color into the first, you know, it's still historic. And, like, we shouldn't be at that point anymore, but we still are. But yeah, he's just really quick. Like they end up building a fake town to distract the bad guys. And then there's a big brawl.
A
and
Potemkin
like you said, it
city.
Ends up. Yeah. And then they end up in Burbank. And then once the good guys win,
do we need to talk about the breaking the fourth wall a little bit?
Yeah. No, I was getting into that. Okay. Exactly. So like they, you know, the good guys appear to win. They chase the bad guys out. They literally break out of a theater screen. And then they end up in Don DeLuise musical number.
Right.
On a soundstage. And they're running around. They get into a cafeteria, giant food fight.
They go from the setting of the movie, the Old West, and they break through a wall that you realize is inside of a soundstage next to a Don DeLuise musical that's shooting. And all of a sudden you realize we're on a back lot in Burbank at Warner Brothers Studios.
Yeah, and then
they end up in.
They go through all that.
They go through the commissary and have a food fight.
They ultimately win the day, and you know the heroes go back to the small town. And they're like, "You guys did good.
Oh, no, hold
you
on.
Guys aren't racist anymore.
You're missing a part."
Okay, go ahead. You know what? I'm gonna let you go because you're the expert on the movie.
Well, I don't know about that, but they have a food fight in the commissary, and then they break out onto whatever the main street is, there, Cahuenga or whatever. That the Warner Brothers Studios is on, and all of the extras and the cattle and everybody are on the street in, you know, modern day at that time, 1974, Hollywood, Burbank. And our main dude, Bart, rides his horse down the street in pursuit of Hedley Lamarr, who has escaped at this point. And then we cut to Grauman's Chinese Theater, where there's a premiere of Blazing Saddles happening.
Now the TCL Chinese Theater.
Yeah. there's a premiere of Blazing Saddles happening, and Hedley Lamarr goes into the movie and starts watching Blazing Saddles, and he sees that Bart is pulling up to the Chinese Theater on his horse outside. So he goes outside, and they have a gunfight, and Bart kills Hedley Lamarr. And then the movie just goes back to the Old West.
Then it goes back to the Old West.
And this all takes like 10, maybe 15 minutes. That scene like broke my brain open when I was a kid.
Well, and then it goes, it's funny because they go back to the town and they're like, you're not racist anymore because you accepted me as a black sheriff and you let the Chinese in and even the Irish, even though you didn't want the Irish.
all right, we'll take the Irish.
Yeah, we need to move on and move on to, you know, greener pastures. So him and Jim, the Waco kid, you know, ride off into the sunset with their horses. But just as they get out of sight of the town, they pull over and there's a limousine and they get in the car and then they drive off. It's such a good, it's just a stupid thing, but it's pretty funny.
It's just delightful.
It's just an absurd movie. You know, there's not much we can say that hasn't been said over the last 50 years.
Yeah.
I don't really have much to say. Like, I just don't want to be butchering these people's jokes, and like I just want to end my portion with this, my little soapbox, and then I'll let you go. I was expecting it to be a lot worse. I was expecting to be like, holy shit, how did this get made? This can never be watched. This would be so offensive to anybody who watched it, because you see people whenever they talk about cancel culture that this movie would never make. If we allow cancel culture, you would never get Blazing Saddles. And I look at this and I'm like, you know, there's a lot of art to this movie and there's a lot of smarts, and I don't you know, this was put in the Library of Congress for preservation just a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that's right. Like, this movie, it is still relevant today.
Yeah I totally agree with that. I think it's a good example of intentions over words that are deemed bad for the, you know, whatever year we're in, buzzwords. I agree with all that. It's fantastic. You know, like it still holds up, and I think there's a lot to mine looking into the history of this movie. I just, based on doing a little bit of research today, I'm going to do another deep dive into some of the jokes that have not translated and try to get more of an idea of the context of them.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely interesting. I mean, you know, when you really think about it, you could have almost done like Blazing White House with Obama being president. Like, it's a very similar kind of thing, putting a, you know, person of color into, at that time, you know, America was still pretty racist, and there was the birther movement. Everyone's like, oh, he's from Kenya and he's a Muslim. And he did a pretty good job. Obviously, he wasn't perfect, but
Insane. Obama is the guy from Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. No, that's not what I said, but there's parallel. Like, it's pretty interesting, you know, only, you know, just over 10 years ago, 14 years ago, kind of the premise, but on the whole national level versus just a small town. It's interesting.
Yeah. That, you know, well, I mean,
we're still in a place that this is happening.
Our country went the other way, right? We didn't learn our lesson and get over our bigotry. We doubled down on it.
Yep.
This is America. That's what we do.
Yep.
I guess I'll just end by saying, I think one of the more interesting things I found out looking at this was Richard Pryor was a credited writer, which I didn't know.
Yeah, I saw that
this whole time. So I thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, Mel Brooks faced a lot of criticism for the amount of usage of the N-word. And he just kind of fell back on, well, I'm writing the movie with Richard Pryor and Cleavon Little, and I have enthusiastic support from them for what we're doing. So,
yeah,
I'm going to do it.
I think it's fair. I was expecting to go the other way. I'm like, yeah, this probably is. And it's a product of the time, but maybe it shouldn't be a thing we talk about anymore. I actually disagree. Like, I even though it's been 20 years since I watched, like, it's not going to be another 20 years before I revisit this movie.
Good to hear it.
Yeah. Anything else, or should we move on to what have you been up to, bud?
Let's move on.
All right. What have you been up to, bud?
What have I been up to? I saw Thor: Love and Thunder.
Me too.
What was that?
I don't know, just enthusiasm.
We were going to do like a little side episode about it, and we haven't had time.
No, it's been insane, and I'm about to leave for 2 weeks on Monday. Ugh.
Ooh. Well, maybe we won't have time for that. You know, I saw it. It was fine. Not my favorite Phase 4 movie.
I put it towards the top of my Phase 4 movies because I really did not like Eternals. We've talked about Black Widow.
It's been a mixed bag. Black Widow is just
unnecessary at this point. Yeah. I hated Eternals.
Oh, no, I mean, Phase 4 has been a mixed bag. Actually,
it's been a super mixed bag.
You know what we should do? They have Comic-Con is this weekend, right? Or SDCC.
Yeah.
Which is Comic-Con. What am I? Man, you're going to be gone. We can't record while you're gone, right?
We can.
It'd be cool to do
time in the evenings.
It'd be cool to do like a little breakdown, because then we could do like a quick Phase 4 retrospective and also what's coming up next.
Yeah.
Because I think we're going to get the announcement that like this is the big team up movie. This is the Avengers, even if it's not Avengers.
Yeah, I think so. I think we'll finally get some footage for, although D23 is also coming up. I don't think we're going to get a ton from Marvel until D23.
Yeah. Well, they're doing, we'll see. Marvel is doing a Hall H thing.
Oh, are they this year?
Yeah, no, we're getting a bunch of news this weekend for sure.
Well, then let's see what happens, and then maybe we'll do something.
Anyway.
This is all going to get edited out. Don't even trip.
Thor, Love, and Thunder. Not the greatest, but also not bad. Yeah,
it was fine.
Rewatched Terminator for the first time in a while. Scarlett's first time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, super fun. I'm excited to watch the second one. I like the second one better.
The second one's the best.
Yeah. Rewatched This Is the End. Haven't seen that in a minute.
I watched that not too long ago. That's great.
Yeah, holds up. Still good.
Yeah, I love it.
I like when the rapture beam cuts off the big Satan or devil, whatever dick.
The demon dick.
And it smashes a bus. I was trying to find out where James Franco's house is. Speaking of problematic people.
Yeah. I don't know. The last time I watched it, I was trying to figure it out too.
Well, it doesn't exist. That's the takeaway. Like, he's walking distance from Melrose, but he also has the Hollywood sign like in his backyard, essentially.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
And he lives in this like big modernist house with a massive lawn. Like, it's not a real place.
With like a main street, not like a gated community kind of thing.
Yeah, there's like four lanes or something. Anyway, the movie's fun. Rewatch Old School. I was really digging into like problematic movies this week, wasn't I? Fuck.
Yeah.
That's fun. I think maybe a better use of Master of Puppets than Stranger Things. We watched Stranger Things.
Yep.
Stranger Things was okay. It really got better as it went on. I did not enjoy the first few episodes.
I think it's my least favorite season, but it had some of my favorite moments.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's my least favorite season. I would have to like rewatch all of them, which I tried and it did not go well. The highs were pretty high, but it felt like a chore watching the first few episodes. And those episodes are so fucking long now.
Every single one was long.
Yeah.
I agree.
Rewatched Adaptation.
Okay.
Yeah. I haven't seen that in a while, and I forgot how good that movie is. Like, I remember it being, you know, a classic and everything, but it was so much fun to go back and rewatch that.
Good.
That's it. Oh, we watched All of For All Mankind.
Oh, you got through the...
Yeah, we watched the first two seasons.
Are you up to date with the season three stuff?
We're finishing season two tonight. So basically, I've lied to you three times in the course of 15 seconds.
You son of a bitch.
We watched all of season one. We're almost done with season two, and we will be starting season three tomorrow.
Excellent.
It's so good, man.
So I started watching Barry.
Yeah.
We got through it. We binged all three seasons.
Hell yeah.
And God, that is a roller coaster.
How does Cat
but
like
it is amazing. Like, there are some random episodes where they put so much production value in it, like the episode with the motorcycle chase and the episode with like the really, really long takes when he fights the Taekwondo master and then his daughter.
Yeah, so good.
Wow. So good. I tried watching Barry like 3 years ago when it first came out with the first episode. I hated the first episode and I didn't keep going.
Yeah.
But I decided to revisit it with Katrina and we watched like all three seasons in like 3 days.
It's one of my favorite things.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Also Thor, finished up Ms. Marvel.
Yep, we finished that as well.
Good. I did this on the previous one, but forgot to mention it last time, but we watched Win a Date with Tad Hamilton. It's so bad. It's so problematic. Like, the hero of that movie, Topher Grace, is awful and did not deserve Kate Bosworth either. Just going to throw that out there. Both people were bad. We watched both Zorro movies with Antonio Banderas.
Nice.
We covered the first one on Ruin My Childhood, and then we decided to watch the sequel, and the sequel is so much worse. we watched, you know, the last episode I mentioned, I took Katrina to see the Moulin Rouge musical, the Broadway in Hollywood. But we decided to watch the movie. God, I love that movie. It's so good. We started watching the season two of Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, yeah. That's a nice little follow-up to Father the Bride.
And then we watched Down with Love and Good Luck, Leo Grande. So Down with Love it wasn't very good, but Renee Zellweger, Ewan McGregor. Mm. And then Good Luck, Leo Grande we thought was a romantic comedy. It's not, but it's still really good. It's Emma Thompson plays a woman whose husband passed away, and you know she was married for like 35 years, and that was the only man she'd ever been with. And she decides that, you know, she's in her late 50s and has never really had a good sexual experience. So she decides to hire a male prostitute. And it's you know, they do have, you know, sex and all this stuff. But like most of it is like essentially it's like three different vignettes of the first time she meets him and she's super nervous. The second time she feels a little bit more comfortable with him. So she's a little bit more ambitious. And then the third time she's a little too comfortable with him and makes him very uncomfortable. And then there's like a fourth time where they kind of like resolve and, you know, eventually decide to go their separate ways, but they, you know, forgive each other for like their third time. They have really kind of fucked up conversations, but it's really, really good. And, a bit heavy at points, but also very funny and entertaining and awkward. And, you know, it's all about female sexuality, which is not something you see in movies very often. So it was interesting. And then we also rewatched Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, and it's still fantastic.
Hell yeah. Love cool. that movie.
I think that's everything.
All right.
And we also started, one other thing, and you'll be proud of me on this one.
All right.
So I had been watching season 3 of For All Mankind. You know, both of us love that show. But we finished a couple other shows, so I got Katrina to start watching For All Mankind. So we started it over and, you know, last night, and we're already like four episodes deep in season one.
Hell yeah.
And I forgot how much stuff happens in season one.
Dude, it's like
heartbreaking.
It's like two different seasons.
Yeah, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. So yeah.
By the time we got to Deke, I was like, how is this not the second season of this show?
Ooh, I'm not there yet. And I'm not looking forward to it.
I know. We had to take a break for a couple days before watching, the Shane episode. So we had kind of a rough week, and I was like, I don't think this is the proper entertainment for
time
the night
to watch. Yep, that's fair. Cool. Let's get into the new one. Paws of Fury,
the legend of Hank.
I'll summarize this one really quickly. This is a child friendly form of Blazing Saddles. It's basically, instead of a black sheriff in a white town, it is a dog samurai protecting a cat town. And instead of building a railroad, the Ikuchu, who played by Ricky Gervais, is building the best palace possible and the Super Bowl, a giant jade toilet for some reason in feudal Japan. I don't understand that part, but you know, it's a kid's cartoon and kids like toilets. But yeah, Michael Cera plays Hank, and he's a dog who got into Japan and, you know, wants to learn how to be a samurai because he was treated terribly and bullied, and he wants to learn how to defend himself. So he's going to get killed, and then Ikuchu realizes he has to put a new samurai in the town he's going to destroy. So he figures, I'll put a dog sheriff in the cat town, and the cats will kill the dog, or it's not sheriff, samurai. The cats will kill the dog samurai, and then it's essentially Blazing Saddles. It's, you know, just like Blazing Saddles, he fights a giant, maybe mentally impaired person. And then they build a fake town. And, you know, there's a few other things that flourishes that are a little different. But, yeah, it's essentially Blazing Saddles for kids.
Yeah, it's Blazing Saddles for kids with, like, a whole extra story about Hank having to believe in himself and learn how to be a samurai, right?
Yeah,
they added this whole other thread that is maybe my biggest beef with the movie. Besides it just like being not funny.
You know what's funny? This is gonna... I had a different experience than you. I actually saw it on opening night. I watched this one first because I knew I wasn't going to have time over the weekend and everything. So I went and saw this on Friday after work. And, you know, there was a showing that started like 10 minutes after my shift. There's a movie theater 5 minutes away from my office. So I went and saw it. And it was like a packed crowd.
Wow.
Like I was in like the handicap row and in the handicap companion seat by myself. But it was pretty packed. And the adults were definitely laughing louder than the kids. I think I was probably the loudest laughing because I saw the trailers for this and I thought it looked atrociously bad. I had no desire to see it. And then I forgot that it was a Blazing Saddles remake. And then when I saw something, you know, something on Instagram or Facebook saying, oh, the Blazing Saddles remake is out. And I'm like, oh, shit. And then I texted you. I'm like, we should watch it. We should cover it. So I went in with really low expectations. And I don't know why, but it tickled me in the right way. I was laughing throughout the movie. And I feel like Some of the adults wanted to laugh, but they didn't think they should be. And then as I was laughing, the adults started laughing. I don't think I heard a kid laugh once in the movie, but the adults were laughing pretty consistently in my theater.
We saw it in a theater with maybe 10 or 12 other people. And people definitely had their kids. And it's kind of the same experience. I don't remember hearing a kid laugh the entire time. And this is not the movie's fault, but there was also a kid behind us that was like crying and like running back and forth every 10 minutes. And it was not a super fun theater experience.
Nah, that sucks.
But yeah, all the jokes in our screening fell flat. There's a couple moments where it was like clearly a reference to Blazing Saddles, and like me and the guy next to me went, ha.
Yeah, I think for me, just because I hadn't seen Blazing Saddles in 20 years and watching this one first, maybe it was a little bit more interesting for me. You know, there's certain things like George Takei, you know, he says, oh my, like a couple times in the movie, like that's low hanging fruit. And you're going to get a little chuckle from that.
I think the whole thing is low hanging fruit.
Yeah, most of it. I'm just, you know, going through my notes really quick. You know, this one, you know, it's weird because this one also had some weird fourth wall breaks, but it wasn't, you know, very consistent. Like at the very beginning, you know, they're singing the Blazing Samurai song. It's similar to the Blazing Saddles song at the beginning of Blazing Saddles. And then the title falls on George Takei's character. And he's like, where did that come from? And someone's like, the title department. You know, I'm like, oh, this is going to be very meta, breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, they kept on teasing it, and then it wasn't.
And then it didn't do that for the rest of the movie until the very end. They get to the fight. And I have a question for you, because I don't know if this was on purpose or not, but there's a point where, like, they're fighting, you know, Hank and Ikuchu and the bad guys are fighting, and, like, they do this thing where they, like, swing on the side of the screen, and then it actually like goes out, and it's like it's in a movie theater for a second.
Yeah.
The lights turned on in my theater when the characters came through.
No, not us. That's kind of cool.
Oh, I thought that might have been on purpose, because I don't remember what movie it was, but there was another movie that I've seen before where the lights...
Maybe it was, and they just didn't give a shit for our screening.
Okay, because like, yeah, the lights turned on for me, but then they didn't go back off, so I was like, oh, maybe this wasn't on purpose. Weird. So I wanted to know if they turned on for you.
So your lights were just on for the last 15 minutes?
Like the last 5 minutes or so, yeah.
Weird.
So like once he came into the theater for a second... Like it does almost as like a comic panel strip where he like holds on to like the panel and then he slides her and you see like movie theater screens and stuff like that. So no, okay. I thought that was just going really meta and trying to be immersive, but I guess not.
Yeah, maybe that's kind of an unfair thing because my expectation is based on how fourth wall breaky the original Blazing Saddles is. So I was expecting it to really like, I was expecting it to have a third act where they were in the movie theater, you know, on the same level as the commissary food fight and stuff. And
yeah, it didn't quite go that far. It was just like a little reference being in the theater.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, we should judge the movie on its own merits. But they kept on like teasing like, this is a part of the movie where we do a training montage, stuff like that. And it just didn't feel like it paid off.
Yeah, can we just skip to the point where I'm good? Yeah, that didn't land for me. Yeah. The jokes that landed for me were the more like cat-centric jokes. Like there's a point, you know, this is in feudal Japan and like it's a town with cats, so there's a point where there's a cat in a zen garden and you think that, you know, he's meditating, but he gets up and like turns around, you hear a zit, and then he like rakes it, and I was like, oh, okay, it's literally a toilet joke for cats, you know, because it's a giant litter box. Yeah, like I actually thought that was really funny. It's stupid. And then you know, they say cat scratch fever and stuff like just a lot of really bad cat puns throughout it.
I love a good bad for pun. Some reason.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Urgent tweets and bluebirds and, you know, stuff like that. Like, oh, get him on the telephone. It was just like miles, like hundreds of miles of cats, you know, delivering a message. Like, it was just stupid. But for some reason, I thought that was funny and like screaming.
Yeah. I feel like this movie is just so like, for like a kid's cartoon movie, it's so cookie cutter. You know, it doesn't like have its own personality. Even just the design of the dog, voiced by Michael Cera, is just like, oh yeah, it's a cartoon dog. Like it doesn't stand out at all.
I didn't.
And after like designs either. After like 20 years of these incredible, you know, moving like works of art that are also cartoon movies for kids, it just feels like at this point you can't fuck that up, you know?
Yeah, I was a little disappointed with like the overall aesthetic of the movie, like. Certain cats looked grotesque and weird, and other ones just looked like cute and kind of like there was no consistency on the designs of the cats. Like some of them were like overly detailed and weird and gross, and then some of them just looked like generic cats you see in other movies. And then they did like flashback scenes, but like when you had a flashback for Hank, this is not a Sony movie, but it looked like they were trying to do like Into the Spider-Verse kind of thing where it was like dotted like a comic book, and the frame rate was a little slower.
Yeah.
And then they did the same thing with Jimbo, you know, call back to Jim, the Waco kid, and now it's Jimbo, played by Samuel L. Jackson. They did the same thing, but it was like a slightly different frame rate. Like, I didn't feel like that stuff worked. It almost felt like they were just trying to cut costs.
Yeah, and also capitalize on how popular Spider-Man is. Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, and his, you know, that was weird.
I thought it was really weird that for ostensibly being an anti-racist movie itself and being based on a very anti-racist movie, it had like very thick, like stereotypical Japanese accents for a handful of the characters, but then like also not other ones.
Well, what's weird is there's very few Asian actors. And so, you know, you have George Takei, but you have Ricky Gervais playing, you know,
right. Yeah, and that's
the main
thing.
Villain,
yeah.
Ikuchu, and then you have, and then like the names are really Ikuchu, and then you have Jimbo, played by Samuel L. Jackson, and yeah. Like you said, you know, Michael Cera's not supposed to be Japanese, but you'd have to imagine that time he would have had to come from another, you know, Pacific Island nation or yeah. China or Korea or Vietnam. Like,
I also just, the Michael Cera thing was weird to me too. Like, you know, I think he did fine with the material that was given him, but if I was making this movie, I probably want to get a black actor as a nod to Cleavon Little.
Or, you know, at least with, like, Samuel Jackson, they're reversing it. I was fine with that, but like,
I didn't like that character either.
No, I didn't like his character either. My favorite character was the Beast or Mongo, who was the giant sumo guy.
Yeah, he was, you know, he was fine. I didn't care for the whole, like I said, like learning to be a samurai thing, and also Jimbo like teaching him how to be a samurai. And then he had his own story that sort of wrapped up with him making good with the Shogun, who he didn't realize was the person that he scared at the birthday party or whatever.
And he was actually cool with it. Like, he just didn't have friends.
My immediate thought was like, oh, Jimbo wasted his life.
Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. It's like, that was his best friend and also his best client and the person he's supposed to protect. And the guy's like, no, it was totally cool. It was kind of weird that you just disappeared.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're the Shogun. You could have reached out to him too. The one thing I do have to say, you know, the fact that Mel Brooks was involved in this.
There's no business like Shogun business.
Shogun business.
Terrible.
You know, there's also something, it's like, you know, obviously the racist part of this movie, you know, they have to address it and then move on pretty quickly because it is meant for kids. So, you know, it's like cats hate dogs. You know, he was going to get executed for, you know, border crossing illegally. So like all these things are relevant to today, especially here in the United States. And then they, you know, one of the cats, they like, I hate them because my dad hated them. And that's good enough for me. And that's like essentially what racism boils down to. Like, racism is taught. Like, nobody's born racist. Like, you're taught that shit.
Right.
You know, even the like, I don't speak dog. We're communicating right now. No, we're not. You just understood me. Like, I did laugh at that. Like, there's enough stuff to laugh. Like, it went by. You know, it's obviously a short movie. It's for kids. It's like 85 minutes.
They kept
even call
on
it
saying
out, like,
that. Yeah.
Yeah. We're about to hit that 85 minute mark. We got to wrap it up. Like, I actually thought that was really funny because, like, I love when I look at a movie and I'm like, oh, it's less than 90 minutes. Fucking yes. This is great.
Yeah. There's enough moments that worked in this for me to think, like, oh, this is a huge missed opportunity.
Yeah.
And Mel Brooks is 96, man. He doesn't have very much longer left, and he wasted 2 years of his life on this movie.
Well, and that's the thing that's weird is, like, so this was originally announced in 2016 as Blazing Samurai. I didn't hear about it back then. I heard about it, I think I heard about this like 6 to 9 months ago. I sent you a text or an Instagram thing like, oh, this isn't going to come out. But they basically restarted the movie. It was a different company who was financing it. It basically got started over in scratch in 2019. And originally they were going to have Samuel L. Jackson and Michael Cera record their stuff together since they're in like every scene together. And then then COVID happened. So that ended up not happening. They ended up recording their scenes at home.
Wow.
Which to me, like you mentioned, Michael Cera was fine in this. It sounded like Michael Cera was phoning this in. I don't think he had really any, and it's not like he's the most dynamic actor out there in the world, but to me, his performance was very flat.
I don't have any disagreements with you.
So, you know, I didn't like that. Just another joke that I like, because they're all cats and like he broke the sumo guy out of prison and he wants to mark his territory. He's like, I even had asparagus last night. Like, that was a joke that every adult in the theater laughed at in my screening.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
But yeah, I mean, you definitely had a worse experience than I did with the kids running around. Like, it was surprisingly
Asparagus joke gets a bigger laugh from me in a better movie. I didn't feel
that's fair.
This movie had earned a joke like that.
I didn't mind the plot of him, you know, believing in himself and becoming a samurai. That didn't bother me because it's a kid's movie. What bothered me was like the last 10-15 minutes of the movie. Like, you know, they did the fake town, that was fine, and they did the same thing, like the way they were gonna blow it up wasn't gonna work, so they had to snipe it, and you know, this time it was Hank sniping it with, you know, a flaming arrow. In the previous movie, of course, you know, Jim had to pull out his pistol and shoot, you know, from a mile away because he's such a good shot, he's able to do it. But after that, it was like this weird thing where the toilet was overflowing and it was just like 10 minutes of water flowing that didn't make sense. And then we
tacked on this whole other thing about the kittens being in danger and Hank's like love interest, sort of. It's like her daughter, who's played by Michelle Yeoh, by the way.
Yeah.
But that whole thing didn't work for me at all.
Yeah, that didn't make sense. But yeah, we just get like all this weird stuff, like the Shogun coming, like, oh, you were my bodyguard, like you already kind of brought up. And then like, you know, the fourth wall break when they're going into the lab, and you know, I already kind of talked about it for a second. The I am your father. No, you're not. No, I'm not. I distracted you. It was just like they were just trying to throw like a million things out the last like 10 minutes. And I don't think the last 10-15 minutes worked at all. You know, they had a thing where it's like, you've seen this in other cartoons, and it's such an old joke in cartoons where somebody eats bullets or bites a gun and then like spits the bullets back out at the bad guys. Like that was in The Mask in 1994 and everything. It's like, I've seen way too many cartoon characters ingesting bullets and spitting them back out like a machine gun. And like, this did that. Like the ending felt super lazy. We had a Gangnam Style reference. We heard West Side Story music and everything. Like, it just seemed like the last half hour, they're like, we just need to wrap this up. And, you know, I liked the call. Like, hey,
well, ironically, they felt like they needed to wrap it up quickly and they call it out. But then there's like three endings.
Yeah. So, you know, going back to like the effects, like I don't think the animation was consistent, and like the water effects looked terrible at the end. Like it looks like they didn't render it completely. Like part of it looks like a polished Hollywood, you know, motion picture. And then part of it looks like a really weird mid 2000s video game, like the water flowing through the channels.
Yeah. Well, you know, the last thing I'll say, since you mentioned The Mask, and I think that The Mask, that joke specifically, spitting the bullets, I'd have to like find it exactly. But I think that gag, like The Mask is doing it because it's an old cartoon gag, like it's a Looney Tunes gag. And I think that Bart is from Blazing Saddles is basically Bugs Bunny. You know, he's a trickster character. And what I really liked about Blazing Saddles is that.
But is he?
Yeah, he absolutely is. The Candygram.
Yeah, I guess.
He takes himself hostage. It's all Bugs Bunny shit.
Oh, no, Hank. Okay. Bart. That was more. No, Bart. Okay. Yeah. No, Bart.
Are you
absolutely
with me?
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, I'm with you now. That tracks.
Okay. So I'm saying Bart is more of a cartoon character than Hank is in the cartoon. And I think this movie would have been better if they axed all of the Hank, oh, I have to become a samurai, blah, 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 kids movie cliche stuff. And they stuck closer to Blazing Saddles, or just made a straight up remake in feudal Japan, and kept him as sort of a prankster who is always kind of good at being a sheriff. I think that's a lot more interesting.
No, I agree. I didn't care about Hank at all in this movie.
No. No.
Like, I'm trying to think, like, there wasn't really any character. And it's funny because, you know, as we're getting to the end, I'm starting to be more critical of the movie. And I mentioned I didn't have a bad time. Like, I didn't hate this movie, but I certainly didn't like it. Like, I had a good time. Like, it just struck me in the right mood for whatever reason.
Sure. And there's value in that.
I think, yeah. But yeah, on the whole, it's not a good movie. It's interesting that it got made.
It's a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
It just bums me out that we wasted Mel Brooks's one shot at doing this.
Yeah, because he hasn't done anything in a while, and I doubt he's really going to get.
Yeah, and it's not just that. Like, I think that my big takeaway from this movie is that it was a great idea. I think like doing a cartoon based on Blazing Saddles and sort of reinvigorating it for a new generation, while keeping the anti-racist message, and targeting it at younger kids is interesting. I want to see that work well.
Yeah,
and this just didn't, and that bums me out.
Yeah, when they announced it, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Why would they do this? I was rolling my eyes the whole time. Every time I saw anything for it, I was like, no, this is stupid. And then as I started watching the movie, I'm like, oh, I get what this is now. I can get on board with this. So I think I was just pleasantly surprised because I went in with the lowest possible expectations.
Yeah,
like, I did not think this could be even remotely enjoyable. Like, I didn't laugh at. There was nothing in the trailers that I thought was redeeming or interesting. And just this time, right? So, you know, I got on board, and I agree with you completely. It's a missed opportunity. So, like, if we have to answer the question, like, did this need to happen? Of course this did not need to happen. But there's a place for it. Like, I thought this was something absolutely you cannot remake Blazing Saddles, and this shows that you can. And there's, like, the skeleton is there.
Yeah.
But the connective tissue and the meat and
needs whatnot, to be handled with just a little bit more care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'll never Final watch verdict. It again.
Yeah.
I'll never watch it again, but, like, this wasn't the remake, but I guess you can. Like, I never thought you could remake a spoof movie or a parody movie like that, and apparently you can. This wasn't the right one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think theoretically it's still possible.
Like, if you got Mel Brooks with, I'm blanking on their names, Lord and Miller. Yeah, those guys.
That's an idea.
The Lego movie and, you know, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and Across the Spider-Verse and whatnot. Into the Spider-Verse, Across is the new one. I think if you got Mel Brooks and them, they would have figured it out.
Yeah, agreed.
So there you go. Just if you're going to do an animated movie, just let those two guys handle it.
Yeah.
Here we go. All right, bud. Where can our listeners find you all over the internets?
Yeah, I'm on the TikToks at Pulisci, Pulisci. I'm on Twitter at Pulisci. If you want to follow along with the movies I'm watching, I'm on Litterboxd at Pulisci.
That was good.
Thank you. And I'm on Instagram at Dyslexic, DysAlexIC. Excellent. If you want to get any film, TV, elder emo type merch, you can check out my Etsy store. We have all kinds of fun t-shirts and sweatshirts and stuff. And use code Remake Rewind for 20% off. And the store is called Burn the Scene Boutique. Is it 20? I don't know.
I thought it was 15.
If it's not 20, send me a DM and I'll hook you up.
Nice.
Only for this episode, though.
Yeah. You got to put a hard cutoff, though.
For the rest of the year, if you message me and reference this episode, I'll jazz you up with something.
There we go. You guys can check out everything that's MDX Pods related at mdxpods.com, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all at MDX Pods. We're also on YouTube. Check us out there. If you want to support the show and get early access and bonus episodes and whatnot and help us keep the lights on, because we absolutely pay for every movie. We don't pirate anything.
We can't see when the lights are off.
Yeah. So if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/mdxpods. Thanks for listening.